What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Well, Lance is trying to figure out logistics because we'll be joined by Maurice Jones-Drew at 9:30, former Jaguar.
Is your first three digits 682, by the way?
I got questions for him.
Yes.
Okay, I accidentally sent something yesterday to Tyler, our old intern, who's now trying to make it in the CFL. He's like, what? What are you talking about? I'm like, oh, wrong Tyler.
I got to give it to you. I will praise Lance
that's
right
now.
That's
not something we do on this show.
Lance recorded that interview with Chad Ford and then took it upon himself to edit it.
Mm-hmm. He did?
Yeah.
That's not usually how it goes.
That doesn't happen with rarely any host around here. Except for maybe like
I know how to normalize.
Jake Asman.
I know how to tighten it up. And yeah, I don't know how always to get into it on the board.
To Lance.
So yeah, no problem. No doubt. No doubt.
It's an unlikely thing. And
let's get some more praise in here. 713-780.
For you?
Oh, yeah.
You just want people to call in and praise you?
Yes. 713-780-3776. I get it all the time at Twitch, obviously.
You seem like
they love me.
You seem like you fit in there.
No, they don't like me there.
You have any conspiracy theories you can latch onto like they do?
Let me see. Conspiracy theories. Well, here's one that Chad Ford had. Do you buy into this? We didn't talk about the interview, but he had one that the Rockets actually are pumping up a lot of Jalen Green stuff right now because they know that's who the Pistons want, mm-hmm. or because they think that's who the Pistons want. He thinks this is something that may be happening. The Rockets believe the Pistons feel like Jalen Green is a better fit for them than Cade Cunningham, so that they're willing to move from 1 to 3. But what? And then the Cavs would then take Cade Cunningham, and then the thought is the Rockets will take Mobley. And then they can get their hands on Jalen Green. So pick up the guy they want and additional draft capital, player, mm-hmm. whatever. The Rockets, so what Chad Ford told us is that the Rockets are basically making sure that Jalen Green is in play at 2 just in case Detroit wants to get a little squirrely and move back. They may realize you're going to lose the guy that you really want.
Or at least make them think they're going to realize it. So they have to deal with the Rockets.
Exactly. So now I do think, and Chad believes that the Rockets legitimately want to get their hands on Cade Cunningham. And I ask him about the fact that, is that the Harden factor? Because I kind of look at, if he's a 6'8", so he's a jumbo ball handler, you know, do they look at this as the model where it's another type of Harden situation? Not the same player, but a bigger guy who can create for others, who can get his own shot, who can shoot from distance because he's a 40-point, three-point shooter this year as a first-year player. And he thought that did play into it. And the fact that, you know, it's hard to find those kinds of guys like Harden, the big lead guards who can score and create for others. That's not something that you find a lot of. Steph Curry and Trae Young both do that, but they are not big guys. And so when you have Cade Cunningham, who's in a neighborhood of 6'7 or 6'8, he believes that's a big advantage. And he also thinks that he is the consensus number one for most teams. And really good interview, some great insight into all three of the top prospects. And if you are an Evan Mobley to the Rocket person, or if you want to be convinced, you want to know more about the big man from USC, he had some great insight into Evan Mobley as well. You can catch all that interview. It's about 28 minutes. You can catch it on our podcast at ESPN975.com. Go to podcast, and a little later today, you'll be able to find that, and we'll get into that.
Sticking with basketball a little bit, Henry Abbott of True Hoop tweeted out something that we all probably thought was coming, but he's the first one to say it's actually going to happen. Sources, source, Blazer star Damian Lillard to request trade in the days to come. If this is a surprise, you haven't been paying attention, then the article goes into all the things that led up to it. We all, after the elimination of the Blazers by the Nuggets without multiple guards, particularly Jamal Murray, there was some thought, well, and Dame kind of made it known that he wasn't happy with losing like that again. And he went to Instagram, because that's where you go, or some form of social media, and said, how should I stay dedicated? How long should I stay dedicated? How long till operation meet opportunity meet preparation? How long till opportunity meet preparation? That is a quote from a Nipsey Hussle song, RIP to that gentleman. So that started the, uh-oh, the most loyal player in the NBA is now subtweeting, or at least in this way, Instagramming about his unhappiness.
The most loyal. Yeah. He's beloved for being old school in that regard and not trying to get out of his spot.
So people started to, let's start making those jersey swaps. Who should I put him in? Should I put him in a Heat jersey or a Laker jersey or a Sixer jersey? You just start seeing those things pop up. So this had been building. Now, Dame's part of Team USA, so he can be kind of away for it for the next couple of weeks as they go over to Tokyo for the Olympics. But Henry Abbott believes at some point in the not-too-distant future, it will be an official request, which he hasn't made yet, but an official request to ask out.
Unless he's moved. Henry Abbott was a long time. He was another ESPN insider for a long time. He's been at True Hoop for quite some time now. We've had him on the show. He lives, I believe he still lives in Portland. He's been around Portland. He's been around that area. I would imagine he's got, I don't know if he's tight with them, but I'm sure he's got a relationship with Damian Lillard and the agent of Damian Lillard or people close to Damian Lillard. So for him to report this, I would, and especially Henry Abbott, who's not just some, he doesn't just fire stuff off for no reason. I would say you might want to keep your eye on this one because this is one that bears watching. And Damian Lillard is a difference maker. Unlike Kawhi Leonard, who's going to have to sit out for a while, Damian's not sitting out anything, and he's going to be a difference maker right off the bat if Portland were to trade him and if we assume that he is going to request a trade. Doesn't mean that Portland would trade him.
No, they don't
have to.
But I can
see where Damian realizes, my goose is officially cooked here. I'm not. I will end my career here with no chance. And I get that. You know, players used to just sit and just say this is – maybe it's because they didn't think they could move. Maybe the demand to trade wasn't really as much of a thing. But we don't see that happen as much. I mean, James Harden got to a point where he realized, oh, this is over. This run is over. And he wanted out. And I don't think he has any ill will towards Houston at all. I think he wants Houston to probably be his home when he's done. But – James forced his way out. And at some point you lose. We saw Deshaun Watson's trying to force his way out, and we know that's probably going to happen now. But at some point you lose goodwill with people with the fan base, because you're breaking, they look at it like you're breaking up with them. And even though the Portland fans, Dame has been Mr. Portland Trailblazer, and just he's been everything you could want from a performance standpoint. The guy stays on the court, does his thing, is not a problem in Portland, has been true to the organization. At some point, the fans are going to see this as a breakup, and I think they'll have Dame's back for maybe some of this. But ultimately, if you're a Blazer fan and not just a Damian Lillard fan, it's going to hurt. Like, it's going to hurt when he says, I want to go.
And Dame is catching that slander on Twitter now.
Oh, is, you know, he already?
He was not necessarily from Blazer fans, but from other people talking about how he was a guy saying, don't run from the grind, and now people are saying, well, now you're running from the grind. In that article on True Hoop from Henry Abbott, some of the other things that possibly led to this were, you know, the issues Dame had, or at least the problems people had with him backing the Chauncey Billups move because of Chauncey Billups' past. So, and we remembered this was that we could think of that's the first time that Dame generally was getting heat from people about something and happened to not be even on the court stuff.
Athletes who usually stay out of the way of that stuff, they act like it can't come for them.
Yeah.
Oh, no, black, white, brown, it doesn't matter. It can come for you, too, and it came for Dame. All he tried to do was say something basketball-related, And then, and he even said, what do y'all think I know? That man's stuff happened when I was like 3 years old. Why are y'all coming after me over stuff like that? I wasn't even watching basketball back then.
So he, so that apparently is part of it. The disillusionment with the fan base after they went after him over that, the losing. And people, now, you know, people will say, Dame, are there adding their GMs or teams saying, let's get him, let's get him. The NBA consistently, at least the last decade or so, the player will dictate where he wants to go. You now, other teams might have better packages. They might certainly have better players that are more attracted to a fan base or an organization. But name the last player of this caliber who said, who openly said, or at least it was reported, wants to go here and didn't wind up there. Now, Dame is a little different. He's under contract for a lot longer, so a team.
But
can
he
be like,
hasn't set a specific team. Has
this
he?
Is what I'm saying. Yeah. If it ever comes out that Dame has a preferred choice and a definite preferred choice, expect him to wind up there because that's kind of how it goes. Name the last guy who didn't get to go.
How many times did it happen? I mean, Anthony Davis is the most obvious one.
James wound up where he wanted to go.
Yeah, no, that's true. James did too. It doesn't happen a lot where say that. It's always reports.
Yeah, no one's ever going to come out and say it. Even Anthony Davis, although we knew the clutch connection, he didn't ever openly say, I want to be a Laker. But you know what Boston found out? You can trade for him, but he's not going to sign an extension with you. So Boston had to bow out. Now, Dame has a longer, long-term deal. So a team could trade for him and go, look, you can either play for us or don't report. But that's obviously a risk for them. But he would out. Obviously, have to report because he's got like 4 years left on the deal.
But you don't make the trade until you've talked to his agent.
Exactly.
Like you wouldn't make the trade unless you felt comfortable that Dame Lillard would stay with you at least for the
midterm. He's under contract for like 4 or 5 years. He signed an extension, so there's not many places. If you trade for him, there's not many outs for him. But I would, before people start to fantasize about where he's going to play, wait for a report where Dame says he has a preferred choice, and then expect that choice to be the team, unless this team is so devoid of assets that the Trailblazers say, we can't make that trade. They don't have anything. It's just the way it goes. NBA players get their way.
There's been an interesting shift, and the NBA Finals don't pick up until the next game, but I'm not so sure about this. I'm not so sure about my son's play anymore. And there's been an interesting shift in MVP odds, and one shift that really, it's interesting that because there wasn't a shift. I'll explain when we come back. 9:16 here on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's The Bench.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
It's 9:20. It's going to be a quick segment. Maurice Jones-Drew is going to join us here at about 9:30 at the bottom of the hour. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him. The MVP odds are out. I will tell you, right now, I had the Suns winning the series 4-1. And so if they win game four, I feel really good about their chances at home of winning game five and going 4-1. But of course they blew it. And that was at the end of that game. And Chris Paul really played poorly that game. I'm a little concerned about this now at 2-2. And granted, you could say it's recency bias, but my concern is that if Middleton gets going at any time, I think there's a better chance that Chris Middleton could keep it rolling because we know Giannis is back. I'm a little concerned that Chris Paul is running out of gas or that that hand is bothering him a little more than he lets on because he was completely passive in the last game. Booker looks terrific right now. And I think DeAndre Ayton is going to, it just depends on how they get him involved. At any time, he could take on a stronger role. But it's a little tougher with Giannis there in the paint alongside of him. It's definitely going to be a tougher ride for him. What is a little strange to me, Dell, is that it's not that Giannis is now the favorite in MVP odds. It's 7-5. It's that Chris Paul is still slightly ahead of Devin Booker. Chris Paul at 8-5 is slightly ahead of Devin Booker at 11-5, and then Chris Middleton comes in next at 20-1. I mean, he's only had one good game. The rest of them have not been good. But Does that surprise you that, that Devin Booker would be behind Chris Paul right now in an MVP vote? You know, MVP odds?
You know, someone tweeted about being surprised that Devin Booker's odds are even that good, considering what he had been before game four. Like, he had shot the ball really poorly, except for the second half of, I think, of game two. But other than that, he's kind of been kind of average to below average, and then he exploded in game four. It doesn't surprise me, because the narrative will be, particularly if they win, if the Suns will, well, obviously if they win, it'll be Chris Paul, unless he falls apart. And I think it, I think people want to give Chris Paul an MVP. It doesn't surprise me that the odds are like that, because the Suns win and Chris Paul doesn't. If Chris Paul can kind of rectify his issues, then, or at least fix his issues, then he's going to be a main contributor. And I think it's an easy vote for people to give Chris Paul the MVP this year. It's a life, it'd be a lifetime achievement MVP. So Devin Booker is going to have to produce what he did, continue to do what he did in game four over the course of the series.
Well, Paul needs to show back up.
Yeah, well, Chris Paul can't be as bad as he was in game four. But if he is what he was in games one and two, clearly game one he was spectacular. But if he kind of can find an average between game one and game four and be that consistently the rest of the way in the final three games or however long it goes, I think people want to give it to him.
Yeah, it will. I mean, I still think the home court advantage is so strong. And I thought this before the series. I said this on the show. It's not hindsight. Those are two very strong home courts. Those are two very loud fan bases. And the arenas have a lot of momentum built up inside of them waiting to explode at any time. And so, obviously, the Suns having the advantage, the home court advantage, makes a big difference. But I do think that if you want to just gauge which of the two organizations right now are potentially headed upward, I would say it's not really possible for Holiday to play any worse offensively. At some point, he's going to have a good game. And if that happens at the same time as Giannis, or if it happens where it's Holiday, Giannis, and Middleton all play well, Suns probably aren't going to beat him. And the likelihood, I think, of Paul, Booker, and Ayton all having strong games is a little lower against the Bucks than it would have been, you know, against, obviously, the Clippers. So just something interesting to keep your eye on. The Yankees are out. The game is not going to be played tonight between the Yankees and Red Sox because six Yankees have tested positive for COVID in a rapid test. They're going to get the full test later. This is a really interesting note. Now, the big concern here is that you had Yankees like Aaron Judge go to the All-Star game. And so now the concern is, uh-oh, are we going to see a super spreader event at the All-Star game? Because you didn't see a bunch of guys wearing masks at anything. I mean, that wasn't the case. And Marley Rivera from ESPN, baseball writer and analyst, who also covers the Yankees for ESPN, said, Rafael Devers just told me that he was asked not to do interviews pregame because one of the Yankees who went to the All-Star game tested positive. Now, he said, Devers said that he is going to undergo testing this afternoon. This came out from a Yankee reporter from ESPN, and the Yankees still went to the All-Star game. They said they tested positive for COVID, and yet they were still involved. So players knew that the Yankees went to the event and yet had positive tests. Now, we had heard previously that all the unvaccinated players were tested and nobody came back positive. We also know that, and this is something else that came out. Let me pull this one here. Jared Diamond, who is a sports writer for the Wall Street Journal, says one unvaccinated Yankees player who tested positive for COVID is symptomatic. Several vaccinated players who have tested positive are asymptomatic. So that's kind of how the vaccine thing works, by the way. So we'll see how this plays out. But will be interesting. It'd be such a Major League Baseball thing to just let the Yankees have separate set of rules. Like, you got one that tested positive. We'll just try to keep it quiet, baseball, and just make sure no one... We don't want to cause a kerfuffle here surrounding the Yankees. Just make sure that no one else is around the Yankees, and we'll just try to keep it quiet. That's what that looks like. That's kind of a bad look, but Yankees, Aaron Judge, potentially out. We'll see for how long if that test lands. If it lands as a positive, then he's going to be out for a while. We're going to break it right here. When we come back, we've got Maurice Jones-Drew, really good running back talk with him, and you know, he's a world traveler. I don't know if you ever look at his Instagram. I always have a hard time figuring out. can he possibly be traveling this much? And during COVID, it can't. Are they old pictures? I want to find out from him. I haven't had a chance to talk to him, and I hadn't seen him, JD, for a while since COVID hasn't let me get out to LA to do TV stuff. So looking forward to it. But he's a really fun guy to talk to. Another fun guy to talk to is Stephen Schell. Sometime we'll talk Wisconsin football. he grew up there. He's been down here for a long time. We used to play basketball against each other when he would come into the YMCA where I was. That's how I recognized his face when he first came over. And now I've just gotten to be friends with him. He's Texas Custom Patios. I had them build a patio for me. They weren't an advertiser. I didn't really know them. And I was just really excited about the work that I'd seen them do online. And I can tell you firsthand that my experience was fantastic. Go to tcplance.com and you can see the before and afters. But what you need to know is in between the before and after, they gave me a drawing that was a CAD style drawing that was exactly to what my house was going to look like. They gave me the budget that it was going to cost. And it never changes. That's how much it costs. They tell me a time frame. The workmanship and the quality was fantastic. I had them add a channel drain in the middle of my patio just to keep it as free of water as possible. And I loved their work so much that I asked that they start advertising on the air so I could tell you about it. Listen, take your house to a home with TexasCustomPatios.com. You will not regret the work that you get, have them do at your home, and it will truly make your house into a home. TexasCustomPatios.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real. Fun. Sports. Listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
John is out, but it's me. I'll be on for another 30 minutes. And Dell's right here with me today, also joined by Tyler. Joining us right now is a guy that I always have a lot of fun with. Fun to talk football, fun to talk running back stuff, but actually a lot of non-sports stuff and other sports stuff, and that would be Maurice Jones-Drew, MJD. MJD,
Lance, what's up, man? How are you?
It's been a minute. I haven't seen you for so long because of COVID.
It has been a minute. It's been a long time, and, you know, I really feel like the people of Houston should just remember me from all those times I rented Reliant Stadium for a couple hundred yards, you know, every Sunday.
Bro, it's the same thing now.
Sorry, they don't remember you because T.Y. does that now.
Yeah, it's either
T.Y. took over the rent.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
There's always a reigning Texans killer. You were one at one point because you were always putting triple digits on them. T.Y. puts triple digits. Well, now everybody puts triple digits
Derrick
on the
Henry,
Texans.
Derrick Henry, T.Y.
It doesn't matter. Derrick Henry hits the 200 mark. Did you hit 200 back-to-back games against the Texans ever?
I never got a chance to go 200 because they were scoring at will too. Yeah, I remember Andre Johnson was in his prime. You guys had Arian Foster, so it was tough to try to run the ball. We were down a little bit,
so
but I gave him $150 a couple times back to back. You know.
You know what's funny is when you were at Jacksonville, that was actually a pretty decent rivalry. Jacksonville Houston kind of developed into a pretty good rivalry. I know Houston brought over Gary Walker and Seth Payne in the expansion draft, and Seth stayed around for a while. And Gary was pretty good for the relatively short time that he was with the Texans as well. But you were part of what was a pretty good rivalry there, and you were on a pretty good Jacksonville team as well. What did you guys think of the Texans back then? Because they were always on the verge. You could see they had some talent, some pieces. They finally put it together in 11 and 12, and then it just kind of faded out again after they had the two-win season in 13. What did y'all think about the organization in general?
Again, you really don't know much about the organization unless you talk to, like, players kind of on the inside, but I remember when Gary Kubiak was there because, you know, he brought in Kyle Shanahan, who was a guy who taught me, he really coached me in college and taught me the West Coast offense, so I had connections there. But it was a player friendly organization. You know, guys loved going there. I remember I don't know if it was 2011 or 12 when you guys had that great run. You were one of the top teams in the AFC, and it was just like everyone was happy. You talked to Jonathan Joseph, talked to Andre Jones, talked to Aaron Foster, Matt Schaub. Those guys were, you know, D'Amico Ryan. They were like, bro, we love going to work. And you always, as a player, you want to love what you're doing. You want to love the environment that you're in. And it seemed like they had a really good one. And so, you know, for a while there it goes. But, you know, as we know, all the good things come to an end at some point. And now it just kind of seems like when you're looking at the organization from the outside, it's not as player-friendly. It's not as exciting to go to work. There's a lot of outside influence or drama that's like going into the locker room, which is going to hurt your team. The locker room, Lance, we always talk about this.
Yeah.
The locker room is a very unique dynamic where, like, salaries can ruin your locker room. Obviously, money can ruin a lot of things in there. If you're paying a guy that doesn't play, that doesn't perform to up to his price tag, you got to make sure you have the right guys in and all those things. And sometimes front office people, we don't see it as that. Not we, but they don't. And so I remember being in Jacksonville, and we paid a couple guys that didn't perform or got hurt, certain things, and we had guys that were in-house that needed to get paid, and we had a pretty good team around that time. And we started letting our homegrown guys go, or the guys we brought in that were leaders, and we started bringing other guys in, and they weren't the exact same leaders as them, or they weren't as talented, they didn't produce as they did, and they ruined our locker room. And it set us back, and as you see, the Jags are still trying to bounce back from that. And that was almost 14, 15 years ago. So you got to make sure that locker room, it has a great chemistry, a great nucleus of guys. You're paying the right people. Those guys are hard workers, and they produce. And if you do that, you should be able to win. And if you look at a lot of these other teams that are consistently at the top, if you look at the Chiefs, for example, the guys they pay perform, period, point blank. I mean, those guys are coming up. Chris Jones, obviously Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill. They're paying guys. Even Sammy Watkins, they paid him. He showed up big in the playoffs. Even though he was banged up, he showed up huge in the playoffs for him. So he kind of justified that payment. Sometimes, you know, when you pay guys that don't really perform, it really messes up your locker room. I feel like right now, if we're talking about the Texans in general,
yeah,
they have a lot of mending to do, a lot of therapy, mental therapy there to get those guys back involved and wanting to go.
Well, and I think they're just going to have to build their core back up because their core has been decimated. But you made a really good point. I know that was mentioned to me when Ballard was with the Bears and with Jerry Angelo. He talked about that. You have to take care of your own, because if you pay somebody else's players and then you let your own guys who have helped build you to a certain point go, it is the quickest recipe, and it's interesting to hear you say that about Jacksonville, it's the quickest recipe to screw up chemistry in a locker room.
Oh, man, you got to remember, and think about this, like, I understand the quarterback is the most important piece. He always touches the ball and all that. But if he's not performing at a high level and you're counting your defense, you can't pay your quarterback $18 to $20 million. Is he not going to play your defensive end and your linebacker and your corner who are locking things down for you? I can specifically tell you about Jacksonville, again, because that's the organization I'm closest with. I remember they paid A.J. Bouye, who was a Houston Texan. They paid Blake Bortles. They paid Barry Church, who was a Cowboy. They paid Tajon Gibson. And they didn't pay Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, doesn't make sense.
And so you wonder why all those guys are out of there. You don't pay Yannick Ngakoue, who led the league in, sack fumbles.
Right.
Right? So you don't pay the guy. You pay the one guy, Miles Jack, but then you don't pay the other two guys that were part of that draft class that helped build that defense and build that team to go to the AFC Championship game. You don't pay Leonard Fournette, who was a guy that you leaned on in the playoffs and just won another Super Bowl the same way he was in Jacksonville. So, like, you got to remember, those guys are in the locker room. They're your leaders because – no matter how much you get paid, the guys are going to follow the guys who are playing the best. And so you got to remember to pay those guys. And you got to, and it's hard because I may like a guy. I may like you, Lance. You may be on my team. I may like you. But if you're not performing, I'll be like, Lance, you're not putting that, you're not, you know, it's hard for me to say, tell you to your face that you're not performing enough to get paid. But I have to do that as a GM because that's my job.
The great Robin Harris.
My job is, and it's expectation and personalities. And if I can't do that, I don't need to be a GM.
The great Robin Harris once said, got to go. We're here with MJD. Maurice Jones-Drew is joining us right now. Is with NFL Network. Are you doing? You're with the Rams too. The Rams broadcast still, right?
Oh yeah. I do the Rams. Call their games every Sunday. It'll be a training camp. You know, right now the Rams. I call it we because I'm part of the. I was when they came to LA. I joined up, so I'm part of the Los Angeles Rams. I wasn't part of the St. Louis Rams, so we call it the Ramley. But we're a part of it, and it's an exciting time for us right now.
You're a Raider, too. You always rep the Raiders. How much time – is that a Raider thing that anytime you spend any time with the Raiders, you become a Raider?
I mean, it's not – I mean, for me, it's a little bit different because I grew up in Antioch.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Probably like 40 minutes outside of Oakland. Went to a prominent high school here in this area, and then I played multiple times in the Coliseum in high school for city sectional championships. And it's crazy because so many people that I grew up with in Antioch or in the Bay Area, they work for the Raiders. Like my old high school receiver, Nick Holtz, is an assistant wide receiver coach for the Raiders. Rob Henriquez is a guy I played youth football with, is the head of their VP sales. So there was a lot of ties there from back home. So when I went to the Raiders, It was more of me going back home and being able to play for a team that I always rooted for and trying to help them get back on top. And so didn't do the best job there, obviously, because I got retired right after year one. But it seems like they're back on track and they're doing some good things right now.
He casually drops he played for a prominent high school. He played for Concord De La Salle. Yeah. Maybe part of the
winningest high school football program in the nation.
Then maybe
right?
part of the biggest high school game ever. I got into a wormhole somehow, some way of watching, because I'm from Southern California, so I was watching some clips about big high school games of the past, and he was the star of the Poly Concord De La Salle game.
Where
De La Salle came down.
MJD will let you know.
People didn't know much about him. They're just this Northern high school, and they beat Poly, and he was the big star in the game. What do you remember about the lead up to that game and the game itself?
Well, it's funny because I know Texas is high school football is huge, right? Actually, De La Salle, a couple years ago, I want to say 2015, we played a team from Texas and lost, and you could see how exciting everyone in that state is about football. But going into this game, I remember our coach said, "Hey, we're going to try to play this team, Long Beach Poly. Like, are you guys up to it?" We're like, "Yeah, like Lance, you know me. If you challenge me to a 40 right now, I may never work out a whole day, but I'm gonna race you. I just had that competitive spirit, you know."
That's true.
And so we wanted to play them, but when you looked at their roster, I mean, they were loaded. This is before all the modern days and the Boscos and the St. Thomas Aquinas and the Allen High School there in Texas and all those other schools that are around the head. This was the first team that I want to say they had 6 or 7 guys go to the NFL within like 2 or 3 years of this game, right? So they had crazy talent, but. We wanted to go up to it. We wanted to play against Mercedes Lewis, who was 6'7", Herschel Dennis, who was the top running back in the state at the time. They had Winston Justice, Emmanuel Wright. Both guys played in the NFL. The Eagles drafted Winston Justice. Emmanuel Wright played for the Dolphins. Mercedes played in Jacksonville with me, right? Darnell Bean played for the Raiders for about 5 or 6 years. They had some dudes. And Kevin Brown, who was one of the top O-line D-linemen who went to UCLA with me. They had some guys, right? Their whole O-line was 330 pounds or more. Our O-line, our D-line probably weighed like 225. Our biggest guy might have been 260. And so it was definitely a tough challenge, but all summer we worked towards that. That was our goal. Like, we had some other games before them, but we wanted to make sure that we were in prime shape because all their guys went one way, and we went two ways, right? So I played running back and safety. My other boys played running back and corner or safety or linebacker. Both our lines went both ways. So we had to be in tip-top shape. But I remember going there, and you'll love this, Lance. I remember going out there and seeing Snoop Dogg, Warren G on the sidelines, Nate Dogg. Like, it was like who's who out there. Oh, it was crazy for a high school game. But it was really exciting. And the best part about football is, like, all the hype, everything going up to it. Once it kicks off, right, once the ball kicks off, all that stuff goes out the window. You just got to play ball. And the team that settles down first normally wins. And we were able to settle down and get into it and get to playing some good football.
I want to switch it back over to what you do best, which is evaluate running backs and your thoughts on running backs. And I always learn a lot when I talk to you about it. It's interesting. No, you've got a definite – I've noticed this with running back coaches, with former – you know, I used to be friends with, God rest his soul, Reggie Cobb. When I talk to Alonzo Highsmith, it's this way. When I talk to running back coaches, everybody who is either in that business, who've been a running back or coaches that position, everyone's got a style that they like, a certain type. I mean, you find what you love, and that's kind of what you look for. I'm curious what you think about Derrick Henry. I mean, obviously the production has been off the charts. Is there any way that a guy, and granted, he's 250 pounds, and when he gets on the runway and gets the legs uncoiled, unwrapped, it's a wrap because he can really, really run. But he does take some punishment as well. Can he, with as many touches as he's getting and the way that he runs, Is he going to be the outlier who can run that style of play that style of football and last very long in the NFL?
I think so. And there's two things why. He doesn't really take on big hits. Even though you think he gets pounded, he doesn't really get hit like that. I think the biggest hit, the only time I saw him take a full-on hit was the guy from the Pittsburgh Steelers when they both made the A gap on the goal line. That might have been the biggest hit I've seen him take since he's been running the ball. So to me, sorry, I'm just getting finished working out, but to me, he's a unicorn, right? See, I think versatility is my favorite thing in running backs, and he's actually one of the more versatile guys if you look at his skill set. He can catch the ball, he can run routes, he can run inside, he can run outside. He could do a little, he could block. He does everything. The only thing is he's 6'4", 6'3", 250, right? He runs a 4.5, 40, or 4.4. So he's a unicorn, and when you find those guys, which I was really surprised to see him fall to the second round, I was like, man, like, this dude here, like, is going to be special. And it was crazy because Tennessee didn't want to use him at first, right? Or they didn't know how to use him. They had to run an outside zone. But when you get his shoulder squares running down, when you get a shoulder square and he's running downhill, it becomes an issue. And so, long story short, like, I think he can last another 5 or 6 years running the way he's running if you take care of his body throughout practice and he continues to train the way he's training.
Who are your favorite? Okay, so I would imagine you're a fan of McCaffrey and Kamara then if you like versatility. Who's the running back that you think is the most underrated running back in the NFL? The guy that you think doesn't get enough attention or maybe is going to take off this year. Give me a name or a couple names.
Joe Mixon.
Okay.
I told people this from the very beginning.
Yep.
Joe Mixon is the guy that can do everything. He's a guy he is Christian McCaffrey, but at 225 pounds, right? He's Derrick Henry, but runs a 4.3 40. So he just hasn't had the ability to show it yet, and I've got an opportunity to talk to one of my old high school quarterbacks who's the OC, Brian Callahan, who's the OC at the Cincinnati Bengals. I think you're going to see them utilize him a little bit differently this year without having Gio Bernard there being that third down back. You're going to see him be utilized out of the backfield more. You're going to see him utilize his wide receiver more. We've seen a little bit of it, a little snips of it, where he can catch the ball and make guys miss. At Oklahoma, I think it was the last game against Auburn they played his last year. I think he had 100 rushing and 100 receiving in the game. You know how hard that is?
It's hard.
Like I know McCaffrey had the 1,000, and that's a little bit. And the reason I say it's a little bit easier, because there's a game where they can shut you down running the ball, and you can catch the ball and get 100. And then, you can kind of ball that way. This dude had 100 rushing and 100 receiving in one game, or close to it, in one game. To me, like, I know Alvin Kamara, really good, all these guys, but I think you're going to see the emergence of Joe Mixon. I've been saying that for a couple of years. He kind of broke out last year a little bit, then he got hurt, he hurt his foot. I think you're going to see him really take off, and you know, the Cincinnati Bengals are going to be pretty good, and I think he's going to be the reason why.
You guys need to check out Maurice Jones-Drew's article on NFL.com. He ranks all 32 RB1s headed into the season. But what's interesting, he has Mark Ingram as the Texans starter, not David Johnson, although you do mention you can't put anything past Philip Lindsay because Lindsay is a talented back when he's healthy, who is a dual threat back. But we'll see how Ingram does with the Houston Texans as a new running back. MJD, thanks for catching up. Oh, last quick one. Are you really doing all that traveling that you do put on your Instagram? Are those old pictures, or do you travel that much?
No, right, man. Listen, first of all, you know, this is what me and Lance haven't seen each other in a while, but you guys got to know, Indiana Jones Drew is real.
That's real?
Right? That's my alter ego.
You traveled that much?
I went to Africa. I was touching the Great Pyramid of Giza. I went to the Temple of Karnak. All the stuff that you've seen in Indiana Jones, Indiana Jones Drew is going to do it. So
you get your hike on, too.
You can watch the National Treasures. Anytime Nicolas Cage is doing stuff, I'll be there doing that same stuff. I figure this, Lance. You know, a lot of black people, we nervous to travel. Uh-huh. I will be the first black person on Antarctica. I promise you.
All right? You're going to be
the
first?
And when I take that picture, I'm going to tag you in it.
You're going to be the first? Tag me in. I want to go. Let me go.
All right, I got you. What if they're the first JAG player to go to Antarctica?
Okay, you can do that.
We'll be good.
You can do that. Probably, yeah, I think you will be the first JAG player. Dell, you're black. Do you travel?
I don't have issues with traveling.
Say you're scared.
No, I'm not scared.
I told you.
No, it's not about being scared.
You're right, MJD. I should have known it.
Some of us don't have the ability to always do it, but I'm not scared of traveling. I love to travel. I can't do it all the time.
I'm not going to lie. I was scared. I was terrified. Oh, let me say this. So if you go to Africa, it's not that the flies are just relentless. It's the way you want your defense to play. They just come in waves. Just droves of them. It's like 20 of them.
High motors.
They land on your face. It's unrealistic, but it's beautiful to see, you know, things that were built over 6,000 years ago, right, that are still standing. Or you're, you know, riding camels. I never thought a kid from Antioch would ride a camel. But shoot, I became a camel rider at one point. I almost bought one. I ain't gonna lie to you. And brought it back to the States. But yeah, why not?
During pandemic,
I just had no way to put it. That's all.
That's right. 9:50. Hey, listen, I appreciate you doing that early in the morning. I know you're on the West Coast, and it's good to catch up. Can't wait to see you next year.
All right, no problem. See you guys later.
Maurice Jones-Drew, you'll be able to check it out on a podcast, ESPN 97.5. Let's break it right quick. And before I do that, I do want to tell you, tighten up your website with SiteJab, SiteJab.com. If you have a website that is old, that is outdated, and maybe you had it done a couple years ago, but it was by someone who doesn't really do this for a living, there's a good chance that your site is already outdated. You've got to have all the information on there that can help turn those eyes into business leads if you're a small to medium-sized business. Sometimes that means pictures. Sometimes it means video integration. Sometimes it has to do with your branding. And sometimes it's just your UX. You know, it's the design and the flow of your website to get people the information that they need quickly. Because if you don't take care of today's short information or short attention span consumer, you are going to lose them. And that's what my friends over SiteJab can really help you do, is convert those eyes into extended time on your site and turn them into business leads for you. SiteJab.com, Houston-owned company, and they've been doing it for over 23 years. SiteJab.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
You know, I feel bad that I haven't given any U.S. Open updates. With John not here,
should feel even worse because it's not the U.S. Open.
I mean, I'm sorry, the British Open. The Open Championship. Colin Morikawa is the leader at 9-under. And Louis Oosthuizen is second, and Jordan Spieth is tied for second, -7. He's -2 for the day. And Morikawa is -6. He's finished up for the day. So that will certainly change. But two Americans, really three if you include Louis Oosthuizen, who is not from America, but we claim him when he's playing well. And he's playing well right now. This Bryson DeChambeau story, before we get out of here, I want to mention, you know, we've become, yeah, he's the guy that got all yoked up and added the weight and the muscles during pandemic. He's played really well since then. But we saw the whole thing with he and Brooks Koepka, that they don't really get along. And we know he's a trash talker. It just turns out that he's just kind of that guy. He is kind of what Fred and AJ would call a dickweed. Because I can say that if I attributed to Fred and AJ calling somebody a dickweed,
sure,
a dry socket, if you will.
Sure.
Anyway, so he had a bad round where he was all over the place with his driver. And in a press conference, he was asked about, you know, he was talking about his first round. And the 8-time PGA Tour winner chose to take aim at his equipment, his Cobra driver to be exact. Quote, if I hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But with the driver right now, the driver sucks, he said after hitting the fairway 4 out of 14 times. It's not a good face for me, and we're still trying to figure out how to make it good on the miss hits. I'm living on the razor's edge, like I've told you people a long time. Well, those comments didn't sit well with Ben Showman, who is the guy that helps to manufacture the Cobra drivers to every golfer's liking. He works directly with them, and he just said, it's just really, really painful when he says something that stupid. Everybody's bending over backwards. We got multiple guys in R&D who are CAD-ing, computer aid design, this and CAD and that and trying to get this and trying to get that into the pipeline faster. Bryson knows it. He has never really been happy, ever. Like, it's very rare when he's happy. So he busted his ass on that one. And he also said if he cornered Bryson right now, he said, you know what he'd say? He'd say he was just mad. He didn't really mean to say it. Well, DeChambeau came out with an apology on Instagram saying that the comment I made in my post-round interview was very unprofessional. My frustration and emotions over the way I drove the ball today boiled over. I suck today, not my equipment. Cobra and I have worked together for over 5 years. Basically, he's trying to keep that Cobra thing alive. He got a little lippy about, I would assume, a sponsor or definitely somebody who gives them some free clubs and works in them directly. But they go on to talk about that Showman says literally the physics and the way that they he said everybody's looking for a magic bullet. Well, the magic bullet becomes a lot harder to find the faster you swing and the lower your loft gets. So his point is, as big as he's getting and as strong, his swing is faster now. There's not any kind of magic fixes for when you're, you know, slicing a ball right or hitting a ball left. It makes it a whole lot tougher. So I don't know. Bryson seems like what Fred and AJ, I wouldn't say this, but for what Fred and AJ would say is a dickweed. That kind of sounds like
he is. I think for this show, we're going to go with dry socket.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I'd like to take that on. Yeah,
we didn't even get to talk about pull-out merchants.
Well, just real quick, we had come through. Richard Sherman kept saying come through all the time. And then somebody asked, hey, what's the white guy equivalent of come through?
It's
come at me, bro.
Come at me, bro. But then you found something else that Conor McGregor said that we've never heard before.
So Conor obviously like threw everybody under the bus saying everybody knew about his stress fractures and whatever. That was on Instagram. On Twitter, he said, all you pull-out merchants wouldn't last 13 seconds in my world. My four-part Netflix docuseries coming soon has the entire behind the scenes. I'm going to title it Mad Max Fury Road with a couple pictures. One of them actually has, I guess he's on a rowing machine, and it looks like he has his entire like left leg wrapped up, ice, all that good stuff.
Oh, to show his injury. What is a pullout merchant?
I don't know, but
would you like to take a shot at that?
I think we know what it is.
I'm going to say that you're about to be a pullout merchant because you're going to pull out of the show.
Now. If that's what it means. Yeah, I have been a pullout merchant in the past.
If you are not a successful one, apparently.
No, that's quite successful, actually.
Are you sure? Doesn't seem like it, considering that conversation I just listened to. I think we know what he's talking about when he adds 13. You wouldn't last 13 seconds after. I think we know what he's talking about.
Oh.
Ah, it's a double entendre.
Yes. Yeah. I believe
that's why he stays undefeated with his proper gentleman whiskey or whatever it's called.
When he's not punching an old man in the face.
Well, you going to take some of this whiskey?
No, I've had enough for the night. I'm going to get hit in the face by a trained fighter.
So I'll punch you. Yeah, you drink this whiskey or you get punched in the face.
Well,
I feel like that's going to work.
Well, this pull-out merchant is leaving, Lance, and a dry socket's coming in. Nick's going to join the show. And if he's got a problem with it, he can come through. I can get them all in.
There we go.
So we got one more hour of the bench, sans John and Lance, but Nick will join me for the final hour. Tyler will still be here, and Lance is gone for the week. So get your goodbyes in on Twitter, because Lance won't be around. We're out. We'll come back on the other side.
When it comes to sports betting, sportsmapbets.com is the site you need. From weekly betting guides to single game breakdowns of the point spread, money line, over under, and more, sportsmapbets has all the info you need to make the best play. sportsmapbets.com.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.